Hey, this is Sunny. If you're listening to this, you're listening on the iTunes feed or the Google Play feed or some other feed. I don't know, Stitcher. Are we on Stitcher? I don't think we're on Stitcher anymore. That's great. Thanks for listening. You should sign up for the Patreon because A, it helps keep the show sustainable. And B, you get exclusive members only stuff. We did a Val Kilmer draft. We're doing polls. We've got meetups planned. You're never going to find out about the location and the ticket sales and all that if you're not a member of the Patreon. So go sign up over there and we'll see you in the comments and we'll get you some extra bonus stuff. And otherwise enjoy this episode on Reminiscence and Paw Patrol. I hope everybody has a good week. We've got an excellent episode on Shang-Chi dropping this Friday. Biggest movie in the history of the pandemic. It's, you know, still pretty big. But anyway, sign up for the Patreon. That way Vic can keep buying champagne, and from actual champagne, not sparkling wine, like some sort of pour. We wouldn't want him to have to live like that, now would we? Okay, see you over there.
When the waters began to rise and war broke out, nostalgia became a way of life. There wasn't a lot to look forward to. So people began looking back. Nothing is more addictive than the past.
No, put me back.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon. I'm Victor Mattis, along with Jonathan V. Last and Sunny Bunch. Just a reminder, the Subbeacon is now available through Patreon. Go to subbeacon.com. You'll easily find us. Please subscribe. Tell your friends. And don't forget about the Subbeacon merchandise store at tpublic.com. I'm looking forward to my next monthly installment from the merchandise store so I can go to Kava.
You think you're going to get Kava money? I think it's more like McDonald's dollar money, my friend.
I was hoping to get extra Kava with extra protein. No, it's not.
Well,
no.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't. What do you think we are?
Hello, Richie Rich Money Bags.
I'm Vic Mattis. I've got $1 billion. T-shirt money.
I would only order it if I knew I can get away. Like if they would forget to charge me for that. Like lost, you know, like they when somebody forgets to tell the other person.
Oh, well, you got to make sure. You know, you're on the honor system there.
Oh, that's right.
It's part of your duty as a Catholic. That's what the priest said.
I haven't been to Sweet Green since. That's where I got the extra tofu for free. Sonny, what's going on?
Big news. I'm a real man. I'm an actual man. I was able to fix something in the house with only one YouTube video help.
What did you do?
What?
So the drain on our the kids' sink, like the stopper wasn't going up and down. It was like it was stuck way down in there. The thing that you pull up and down was loose.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't doing. There was nothing going on. So I figured out what was going on. The little lever down below had gotten disconnected. Whatever. And the first video, I lied. It was actually a two video job. It was a two video job because the first video I watched was wrong, or not wrong, but it like didn't fix what needed to be fixed. I had to take like all the pipes out from underneath. I had to take all the pipes out, push the little stopper up, get the knob and ball, and I don't know what any of these, the stick and ball in there.
Mm-hmm.
Get it all screwed back.
Did you have a little
in,
tub underneath there to catch all the water as it
no.
came out of the J tube?
No, thankfully, no. There was no water in the J tube thing, or they're like I didn't take that part off. That part was still connected to the drainage. The J tube part was still connected to the drainage. I was just able to unscrew it, you know, from the part that comes down from. I don't know what any of these parts are called, but I was able to get it all done and fixed. I only broke one piece. I only broke one new piece of the sink, and I was able to do it with all the parts that I didn't actually have to go to the store and buy anything. Now I'm gonna have to go to the store and buy like a new set because the
stopper?
You know,
did you break it?
Yeah, like a new stopper. No, it's not broken. It's all working now, but it, like all of the like seals were corroded, and I wiped out a bunch of guns. If I leave it in there, it's gonna rust. It's gonna rust. It's gonna lock in place.
Is this an old sink?
I mean, God only knows. Judging by the pieces that are under there, it has been replaced at some point in the last 15 years.
So
by
you were probably clearing out gunk from previous owners and stuff.
No comment. No comment about what was in there. It was black tar. It was like the black tar from the X-Files. Remember the X-Files?
You know they have solved this design problem, Sonny.
I don't know. I didn't know that. What design problem?
So the design problem of sink stoppers, where they are run by a little knob that you pull up and down that is from a rod that goes down, it connects to something. You don't have to do that anymore. You don't have to live like that. They have push-button ones.
What?
Where the stopper itself, so you just do away with the rod altogether. You get a plumber's a drain wrench, and you pull the whole thing out, and you put a new one in, and it's just a, you push it down, and it clicks, and then you push it again, it clicks to release.
How about that? Wow. That seems like it would be a much better solution than the ridiculous thing that we have in there right now, which is literally like, it's like a science experiment. It's like somebody was like, how do I use force to lever up, actions and whatnot? And
this is much simpler.
That sounds a million times better. Well, maybe that's what I'll buy when I buy a replacement, when I go to the store, when I go to Home Depot this weekend, and I'm like, good gentleman at the Home Depot, which is the push-button stopper thing that JVL told me about?
It takes 5 minutes. You just get some plumber's putty, and you never have to touch any of the pipes beneath the sink.
This is such great content. Kate's going to love this. we have... What the sink, which is a newer sink in our basement right here on this floor, the new ones, you can't remove them anymore. They're locked in there, and it's no longer metal, it's plastic. And it's instead to clear it, you can buy at the hardware store a thing to you just shove it in there and it just pushes and hook up and just drag all that gunk out. But Kate hasn't bought that yet, so I'm sure I'll ask her how it goes. Did you get that black gunk out? Well, good for you, Sonny.
So anyway, I did that literally in 10 minutes this evening. It was a real land speed record for me. I was able to figure out the problem, get it fixed, and get it done before the kids were even in bed.
So. You know, former Sub-Beacon, Substandard guest host Mike Warren, he replaced the whole toilet. He pulled out the old one and put
Ridiculous.
A new one in. I think that's probably
just showing off. Just showing off.
It's all about the wax ring. It's less difficult than you think.
It's more difficult than I'm willing to do. Tell you that.
JVL, what is going on with you?
I would like to talk about OnlyFans.
OnlyFans.
Oh. Did you
guys find my secret OnlyFans?
So so this week, the marvelous capitalist system that is America, the highly paid CEO of OnlyFans announced that they were going to ban sexually explicit content from the platform. This would be like eBay saying we're going to ban the sale of used items. From our platform. This would be like Morton's saying, we are going to ban meat. We are going to Impossible Burgers only and Impossible. What cockamamie fuck? This is what they do.
What percentage of people go to OnlyFans for the other stuff?
Zero.
0%.
0%. OnlyFans is the Patreon of pornography. And the CEO of this company, which is probably worth, honestly, $3 billion. This is one of the great mysteries in Silicon Valley world, is that OnlyFans is like one of these megalodon sharks that nobody's even really sure if it exists, right? It could swallow a great white whole, but no one even knows if they're there because it's swimming below the surface. But people think its valuation is probably something like $2 or $3 billion. It's massive.
Is
in the amount of revenue it brings in.
TikTok for porn. Is that what
no,
this
no, it's
is?
Patreon for porn.
It's Patreon, like, you subscribe.
Yeah,
it's like
Patreon for porn. You basically, what you do is send somebody money, and then they take their clothes off for you and possibly also engage in sexual intercourse.
But it's not What? Oh, why?
Yes. Vic is very curious.
It's not individualized, is it?
You can.
Yes.
Oh my. Oh, for a certain price.
There are ways you can do that.
Yeah, and you know what happens? You know what happens? You think you're doing it. You think you're doing it on OnlyFans, and then the girl says, "I'll be right back," and then she leaves, and then some other dude comes on and said, "Dude, we've been recording you all this time, and you now have to pay us $10,000.
There's a knock at the door, and it's that guy from Catch a Predator.
It's Chris Hansen. What are you doing here with the wine coolers?
Listen, dark web, Mattis nightmare.
For me, this is not about pornography. This is about the failures of capitalism, where this guy is getting paid God knows how much money to run this company, and his genius idea is, hey, we should blow up our company.
Obviously,
96 hours later, they reverse course without saying, there's like, we will continue to allow sexually explicit content. Yeah, no shit you're going to continue to allow sexually explicit content.
But they did this. I mean, he did this. The reason that he did this makes a certain amount of sense, because they couldn't get investors, because nobody will invest in a pornography company.
Openly, yeah.
Nobody wants to be like, yes, I made my tech billions because the 19-year-olds are masturbating on camera for people to watch. Like, nobody wants to do that.
Because like, oh, they're 19. Never mind. Sorry. I'm sorry. I'm not interested.
Let's go box office. Let's move
Suddenly,
on to the box
Vic is
office.
Not Come interested at all in this conversation. Anyway,
you're terrible.
All right, Victorino, how are you, buddy? How are you?
I'm doing fine.
You're breathing a little heavy there. Is everything okay?
Am I breathing heavy? I ran 5 1/4 this morning.
Ooh.
But it was so hot, and I don't think, you know what, my complaint is that the app. Is there an app for running? I'm sure it has not been developed. Maybe it hasn't.
God.
That can actually gauge an honest sort of assessment, like a JVL. He's put his hands over his head, calories and stuff. How much, you know, based on things like the weather? Because there's no way I just burned, let's say, 728 calories, because it's like the humidity is 90% out there, and it's, you know, and it's sweltering.
Do you think you
burn
more or
fewer
calories?
No, I'm absolutely convinced I burn more, but I don't know if there's a way that they...
Victorino? Yeah.
You know, sweat aren't... That's not calories. You're not sweating out your...
In German, it's so much more easier. You know what they call calories? They call it energy. Anyway, yeah.
Well, that's the country that invented sport chocolate.
Yes.
Victorino, what does it matter what an app tells you you did? If you did it, then you did
it. I need to. Well, that's true.
What,
and I make
what,
fun of
what
other
does
people
it matter
for,
if you would like to
like
have
I'm,
an app that just tells you numbers?
Yeah.
So how many
I
calories
need to
did I just
I
you open?
To
it's a random number generator. It says 72 billion.
No, Creedthoughts.blogrun.
No, I need to know so I can be like, oh, I deserve my double quarter pounder with cheese today.
You're going to eat that no matter what.
Okay, true, but still, I just want a more honest. To be feeling
you're like these people who are like, oh, I can't work out without my Apple Watch because then it won't count my
steps.
Right.
No, I'm
only
a few steps
that
away. Away from saying I have to post it and on social media, because that's the next
step.
Are
you on Instagram, Vic? Yeah, are you an Insta runner?
Yeah. And then that's the next step in saying, look at me. Look, here we go. And if I don't do that, then it didn't happen.
Didn't answer my question.
I haven't gotten Instagram in a long time.
I just joined
Instagram to look at other people's Instagrams, you know.
Well, that's how it starts.
Isn't that how it starts?
Oh, God.
Yeah, and I thought about it. I said, suppose I didn't even run with an app, and I just ran, you know. But, you know, I need to keep track of these things. I talked to a guy who was a serious runner, and he some of these people keep, runners' journals. You know this JVL where they write down, like,
yeah, of course.
Yeah. You don't do that.
No. In fact, I never. No, that's not true. In high school, I kept track of miles.
Yeah.
Because, like, at my peak in high school, I think I was running 90-mile weeks.
Oh, wait a minute. How break that down then?
You'd like me to divide 90 by 6
seven?
For you? No, because you always have to have one recovery day.
It's 15. It's 15, Vic.
15 miles a day?
I was captain of the cross country team. We ran a lot.
Isn't that all? It's not like running a marathon every day.
How many miles is a marathon, Vic?
It's more than half.
Vic, how many miles is a marathon?
13.1 is a half.
So you haven't been on Instagram recently, Vic?
No. You'll have to. Nice. Lovely. Lovely. But I'll tell you what. Thank you, JVL. I tell you what has been working out is the garden in our backyard, because it's late August, so it's beginning to bear fruit. And that's been very exciting because we have these saucerific super chilies. And I've been able to use them now or get them there. But they are something like 40 or 50,000 on the Scoville scale.
What?
So it's really hot.
You are growing those yourself?
Do
you need
a
license for that?
Yeah, no, it's actually
below. How do you know that they're 30 to 40,000 on the Scoville scale? Do you have an app that you grind the peppers into and then you pour it into your computer, you pour it into your laptop and you're like, how spicy is it?
I typed in the brand, Saucerific Super Chili. And it's between 40 and 50,000, so it's below Bonnet, but it's about habanero level. Of course, the question is, what do you use it in because it's so hot? And I put mine into my own homemade Thai vinegar, and the Thai vinegar is called Prick Dong. And I asked Kate if she wanted to taste my Prick Dong, and she was so scared. She's scared. But I tasted my Prick Dong. And let me tell you something.
Your Prick Dong?
Your own Prick Dong?
You put your Prick Dong near mouth?
There was a little bit of a revulsion at first. I said, I can't believe this is happening. And then it's like, actually, it's not that bad.
I'm surprised you could reach it.
It was really quite something. And you know what? I'm still thinking about it.
Speaking of Paw Patrol,
did you let Michael take that into the into school? Because I imagine that in eighth grade lunch hour, that is a huge hit. That gag. Oh, yeah. Hey guys, who wants to taste my Prick Dong?
I've used.
Because I got to tell you, Flash. If Flash were to listen to this episode and hear that this is a food that he could say good conscience in front of the nuns,
Would you like to taste my Prick Dong? It's that kind of level of humor.
This is gold. I didn't know that you made Prick Dong.
I did, and it's incredible.
Is it a regular? Do you regularly make Prick Dong?
Yeah, this is my first time. This is my first time.
This is your first time tasting your own Prick Dong.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I was.
But you've had other people's Prick Dong.
I've had. You know what? Yeah.
You go to the restaurant sometimes. You just chow down on Prick Dong.
I know the Thai guy. I know who makes it. He had it.
In DuPont Circle.
I can't believe this is happening.
Now you first experimented with Prick Dong in college, right?
No,
you were drunk one night and you were out with some buddies.
You get really
hungry. And you said, I can't believe I'm tasting Prick Dong. I never thought that I would be into it.
Never, not in a million years.
You know how you get the munchies for I've died.
But you're like, it's good though. I bet it clears out the nasal passage.
The next morning.
Oh my God, I'm so drunk. Oh my, I can't believe I'm doing this. Oh my God, it's crazy.
Okay, by the way.
No, give me some more. Oh my God, this is so wild. I'm not into this.
Oh my. Mouth.
This is an old JVL VLM skit that we did for years.
You need the visual component to it.
I can't believe this is happening. Skit has been worked on for so long. It's like we it's been practiced for a long time. Anyway,
up in the Catskills, we used to.
Yeah, I know. We did it until we got it into a nice, perfect little package. The problem is, in fact, the next morning, because you do pay a price. But anyway, I was going to say, speaking of incendiary, how about that box office, Sonny Bunch? It looks like the movie Free Guy over the weekend came in $18.5 million, followed by Paw Patrol the movie at $13 million, and Jungle Cruise with $6 million. That's a little bit of a drop off. Box office thoughts.
Free Guy dropped 34% weekend to weekend, which is a small drop. It's a big win for Disney and everybody else involved with the movie. Which again just goes to show that movies that are not shockingly movies that are not on TV hold a little bit better at the box office than movies that are currently on TV.
Wait, I'm sorry, hold on, Sonny. This is a real question.
Yeah.
So this is the best hold we've seen post pandemic, right?
Yes. Okay. I mean it depends on how you want to break it down, but I would say that in terms of major releases. It is the best first weekend to second weekend drop that we've seen.
This is also the first post-pandemic instance of the writer of the film appearing on your podcast, correct?
Absolutely. This is true. Zach Penn, who was one of the credited writers on Free Guy, was a guest on on Bulwark Goes to Hollywood, which means that my podcast probably propelled this film to its enormous success at the box
office. Do I have to connect the dots for you?
I mean, I think people can understand what's going on here. If you show up on the Bulwark Goes to Hollywood, you're going to have a big hit on your hands.
I will say to anybody who hasn't listened to it, the interview is amazing. It's so good. And you should run out and listen to it. Victorina, did you listen to it? It's so good.
No, I don't listen to podcasts. But my first question
While you run, you like to be alone with your own prick dong.
Yeah, I meditate.
You just like to think about your prick dong while you're running.
I can't wait to get back to it. It's getting spicier every day. No, my first question would have been, are you related to Chris Penn, Sean Penn?
Penn.
Different branch of pens. No, Zach Penn was the guy. He wrote Last Action Hero. He sold it as a spec script at like 23. And then it went through a whole bunch of Shane Black came in and rewrote it. He's like the officially credited screenwriter, but Zach Penn still has the story credit, was like on set, you know, working with them while they were making it.
Do they all get royalties from this because of the process, or are they because they sold it, they optioned, like it's a flat,
He has a credit on Last Action Hero, so he gets, you know, whatever the guild mandated royalty is. But he also wrote PCU and with Jeremy Piven, and he's written a bunch of stuff. He wrote Ready Player One. He wrote
I love that movie.
X-Men The Last Stand. Which it was very funny listening to him talk. I was like, is there anything you want to talk about? He's like, yeah, I want to talk about how great X-Men The Last Stand is and how that movie was unfairly shat upon by the masses, which it was amusing.
Was that a Brian Singer?
That was a Brett Ratner. So Brian Singer did the first two. He did X-Men and then X2, X-Men United. And then Brian Singer left the X-Men series to go direct Superman Returns or whatever.
One of the most interesting things he said in your interview, Sonny, was talking to people who complain. He was going down the list of complaints people have about Last Stand.
Yeah.
He said one of the things people complained about was, why did you kill Cyclops? And he said, well, nobody wants to hear that James Marsden just wasn't available.
Yeah.
James Marsden couldn't do the movie.
I had to write him out.
So I had to write him out. I'm sorry that one of the star's schedules conflicted with our shooting. But I thought, wow, that's one of those funny things. Again, people don't realize when they...
All right. So he interesting guy. I like talking to him a lot. Maybe we'll get him back on to do... a show when PCU gets a 4K Blu-ray release.
Excellent.
That'd be great.
And the Free Guy is a Disney movie, and Jungle Cruise is Disney, isn't it?
Yeah, Jungle Cruise also Disney.
So first and third. And Jungle Cruise has made a lot, but it was a big drop off, isn't it?
It's holding pretty well. Jungle Cruise will probably hit a multiple of about three, a little over three, which is very good for this pandemic era. I mean, for instance, Black Widow I think is going to have a multiple of 2.3 or 2.4, something like that. Multiple is the total box office divided by the opening weekend. So if you have an opening weekend of $100 million and you have a multiple of three, the movie grosses $300 million. But Jungle Cruise is holding okay, just like Cruella held okay. The family stuff on Disney Plus Premier Access does okay. And I think pretty sure of at this point is that the Premier Access numbers are all heavily front-loaded. I saw somebody talking about this. Maybe it was the Entertainment Strategy guy, but the number of the like millions of hours watched of Black Widow fell off a cliff first weekend to second weekend,
hence the lawsuit.
They made $60 million that opening weekend on Premier Access, and I bet they didn't make, I would be surprised if they make another 10.
Right. So the main movie we're talking about today, however, is not something that was not on box office, because it's not
a huge box office.
It was in theaters.
Reminiscence, but it grossed like $2 million.
3,200 screens. Oh. It was on.
It was on all the IMAXs.
It was an ultra wide release.
Yes,
you could have seated an IMAX.
Let's pull up the actual numbers here. Well, let's look at the latest weekend here. Oh, not in the top five. Better go to the next page. Oh, Not number seven. Number seven was The Protégé. I saw that in theaters too. The Protégé grossed $2.9 million. The Night House, also number one. I watched that as well. Yeah, grossed $2.8 million. And Reminiscence, the ninth highest grossing movie of the year in 3,265 screens for a per screen total of $597. That's what we're talking about today. Oof. Do we want to talk about Paw Patrol first?
Or $9 million opening weekend gross.
Bad.
For
That's a bad,
Hugh
bad opening.
Hugh Jackman in a movie in which he does not sing.
Yeah. Well, that's mistake number
one. And the budget, I don't know how much they spent because it looks like everything was fake in the entire movie.
Well, everything was fake. I mean, it was all green screens.
I was wondering if CGI. They just flooded the city.
Do we want to talk about Paw Patrol first, JBL, or do you want to talk about
that
later?
Well, no, we all watched Reminiscence.
Yeah.
All right,
let's talk about it. I have a lot of thoughts about Paw Patrol, secretly, I think Paw Patrol is going to be what the audience is most interested in, because I think people have sneaky, strong feelings about Paw Patrol.
Okay.
But we'll also, Reminiscence is very interesting.
Okay.
Yeah. So we should talk about that.
How about a big boy review of Reminiscence, Sonny?
All right. So Reminiscence is a sci-fi noir along the lines of like a Blade Runner or something like that, right? It stars Hugh Jackman as a guy who in the war, in the resource wars after the global warming and the waters rose, blah, blah, blah. Was an interrogator who went into people's minds and made them remember things, and he has a machine that can let you see the memories. He has used that skill in the world that exists now to help people go back into their own past and remember happier times, because it's such a sad, sad place that they live now. Sad world, fallen world, very dystopian, blah, blah, blah. The world the city they live in is Miami. Miami has been flooded by the rising waters, water in the streets, water everywhere. But the riches have taken all the dry land. The land barons, they've taken all the dry land and they're hoarding it for themselves. Everybody else lives in ankle-deep filth, but not the land barons. So, like I said, it's a noir. It's a mystery. A femme fatale, a woman, May, played by Rebecca Ferguson, the lovely Rebecca Ferguson, wanders into his life and asks him to help her find a set of keys. And she's a singer in a nightclub, and the song that she is singing triggers a memory deep within him, and he falls in love, and they fall in love together. And then she disappears one day, and he can't find her. And the whole movie is about trying to track her down and find her. We can talk more about the mystery at the center of it in a moment when we get to the spoilers. But let me tell you the things that I liked about this movie. Here are the things I liked about this movie. I liked the look of it. You know, I know Vic just talked about how fake it looked and how out. I liked the whole weird kind of water world Miami as Venice look. I liked the look of the bank vault office, right? I liked specific things in the movie. I like the way that Hugh Jackman and Thandi Newton, who is his assistant, how their office looked. It's set in this big bank vault, and it is like has this kind of high cavernous ceilings. It's got this great vault, but it's just kind of big and open and spacious. I liked it. It's smoky. I like the bars. I liked the nightclubs. I liked how everyone was dressed. I liked how everybody looked. I liked watching all of the images on screen is my point. I liked watching what was happening. I'm a sucker for hard-boiled voiceover. I liked the like kind of hokey nonsense that Hugh Jackman was saying throughout the movie. I liked everybody's performances in this movie. I love Rebecca Ferguson. She's great. I love Thandi Newton. She's great. I love Hugh Jackman. He's great. Everybody in this movie. Cliff Curtis, who I kept like trying to think. I was like, where do I know that guy from? Where do I know him from? And then it came to me. He's the guy from Sunshine who. Have you guys seen Sunshine? I don't know.
But, I was going to say Training Day.
He's in Sunshine. He's in Training Day. He's in a whole bunch of stuff. I love all of the performances in this movie. I like the idea. I like the idea of going into people's memories as an interrogation method, trying to, you know, get the secrets out of their minds in a kind of Inception-y sort of way. I like all of that. The problem is this movie just is not good. It just the story is not good. The story is not. I like the movie and it's not good. I'm like, it's one of these weird things where I can kind of recognize and reconcile those two things in my head, because the story is just feels rushed. Nothing is given any chance to breathe. The world building, it looks good, but it doesn't. There's no reason for a lot of it, and it just we could talk about the end more in a bit, but I felt like the end was a cop out. I felt like they were trying to give Hugh Jackman's character a happy ending that should have been much sadder. And we could talk about how sad his actual fate is, but I thought that like they let everyone off the hook by having May end up being a hooker with a heart of gold. So those are my big thoughts.
Spoiler.
Spoiler. Thank you, yeah. Sonny. JVL.
Vic, you hated this movie, right?
Let me go through it here.
Do we have a proper quadrant score?
We do. I forgot to do the tally. But the plot is, I gave it a B+. I enjoyed the twist ending. It wasn't, it was just one twist, and that was good enough for me. Like, oh, wait, she's actually good in the end. Oh, I enjoyed that. Okay. Duration, B, it felt long, even though it was under 2 hours. Action and violence is B+. It's not bad, but again, half the stuff. I mean, look, Hugh Jackman's got the moves, you know, and here he actually plays a guy who actually, despite being a veteran of the war and,
the resource wars,
and he's supposed to be really good, is actually nowhere near as good as Thandie Newton. And I like Thandie Newton. Thandie Newton, by the way, was in a... I remember her in a movie with Nicole Kidman, and she was... it was an Australian movie.
It's her first movie.
Yes, and she was in love with the white boy. It was an interracial thing. That was a good
movie.
He
was in love with her. Yeah, I'm just Flirting, I think, was the name.
Yes!
It was an indie movie. Yeah,
I think that's what it is. That's what it is. Okay.
It was great.
And Sex Nudity gets a, like a B. There was a nice scene in there.
How does it get a B?
She sits on him. I'll give that a B. It's my quadrants, JVL.
They're all fully clothed.
But at this rate, in 2021,
it's PG-13 sex.
In 2021, we're going to get to the point of I'm going to have to give it an A+ because there was a kiss. That's where we're going with movies now.
You know, can I just take a detour on this? Because the lack of nudity in this movie made me angry.
Because there should have been.
So let me explain. Let me explain why, right? So I would say a very large percentage of the time, especially historically, the use of women and female nudity in movies has been quite exploitive, but it's not always exploitive. And in this particular movie, there is a scene, a very crucial scene, when Rebecca Ferguson first meets Hugh Jackman's character, in which the main plot point of the scene is that he is putting her into the tank.
Oh,
and
right.
She takes her dress off to show her naked body to him. And he goes to turn around and he says, you don't have to do it. And she says, well, why not? You're going to see it all anyway. And this is a moment which cries out for the purposes of the plot to have some nudity to deepen the case. So you see why Hugh Jackman is all like, right? And it was weirdly distracting the lengths they would. It was practically like in the end of the first Austin Powers movie, where there's the fantastic scene where, like, you know, they're walking around holding cantaloupes and a blind.
Yeah.
It was that level of ridiculousness where I just thought to myself, I'm sorry, are we not grown-ups here or not?
No, we're not.
Question.
And we're never going to see nudity ever again.
Can I?
We saw nudity in the Suicide Squad.
Can I make one suggestion here?
There's dong. There's Dick Dong in Suicide Squad. Do you not remember the prick dong?
Please, so, honey.
JBL, I understand your point here. I think it's wrong though, in the sense that we should not see the nudity at that point, but later when they actually do make love, right? Yeah. That is where there's the payoff. It's, you know, you wait
again.
and you
famous.
Get the nudity when it is
maybe.
Thematically.
Maybe. I thought interesting than when she is showing him something that he doesn't want to see, and that this is the forbidden fruit which helps sink her hooks into him. Like, it's literally, it's a big part of the, you know, because again, if he in that moment thinks too hard about it, he would look, I assume that going into a tank is kind of like a thing that people save money up to do. And the idea that in the future they don't have the tile or the air fob, that you can't find your keys in the future in 5 seconds flat using your cell phone seems right. insane it to me. You would have to go and get incepted in order to find your fucking keys.
Well, which is what
and
I was
maybe he might have thought about that, except that she's wagging her tits at him, right? This is, am I missing something?
I understand what you're saying. I think that thematically it would be a better payoff to have the nudity come later when they are in you know, in,
this is it.
In mid-coitus.
This is as good as it's ever going to get from
so
now on.
That bugged me.
I find it. It's like I thought the movie was Vertigo meets Minority Report meets Inception. That's what I thought. The tank thing is right. Also, how long is he in the tank for? In the end, is he there permanently, or does he just go there every day?
No, he's permanently there. He's been there for 60 years.
It doesn't make any sense. How is he eating?
And
you notice he's also still
bathroom.
In very good shape.
Yes.
Yeah,
right. So somehow there's no muscle atrophy.
Don't go.
Got some gray hair. A little gray
tank?
Beard.
He's still swole.
It doesn't. It's no. None swole. Of that makes sense.
Okay. JVL.
I am shocked by the level of meh that you guys are willing to extend to this movie because it's terrible.
I didn't know where you were going with that. Okay.
And it's
that you
terrible.
Really did not like. You really did not like. I was like,
well, it's not that I don't
I
like
it.
It's that it's
it
it's very bad. I mean, the promise of it is Chinatown meets Inception, right? And literally Inception, because if you recall, Inception, the idea is that they steal secrets from people.
Yeah.
And not sure. not put it's only the you know, that's the setup for it. The whole movie takes place when they're trying to do the opposite.
Right.
So this is what it is. It is stealing secrets from.
Right. The only difference is it's not dream, it's memory.
Right. It's not dream, it's memory. And everything about this just is wrong. I mean, the very first part, Sonny, you touched on this. The world building is all totally adjacent to the story being told in the movie. There is no reason for this movie to take place in the post-apocalypse. There's no reason for it to be in a submerged town. There's no reason for there to be resource wars because it's a murder mystery. It has nothing. And the movie spends all of this time on that parallel story that has no payoff to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it has no ideas in it because it doesn't tell you any of the backstory. It just sort of waves at the backstory of what you know these things that happen, but you know, like the road without ever telling. Except that it doesn't need it. Yeah, and that's such a huge. Again, I love economy of force in writing, and this is a movie which is bloated almost literally twice as long as it needs to be mm-hmm. because it spends so much time on this totally separate thing. You could see the seams in, I would bet anything, there was a huge post-production problem with this movie, too. There are a couple moments. The one that really jumps out at me is when Hugh Jackman's character all of a sudden goes to like this haunted house where he walks in on the corrupt cop.
Oh, right.
And the cut from one scene to the next is so
weird.
Nonsensical, and it is coupled then with a voiceover that clearly is just like looped in ADR to try to, you know, something went wrong or they decided to cut a series of scenes or a subplot or something. And there's a couple other times when you get that film.
This movie feels like it is a 2.5 hour movie that somebody was like, we need to take 40 minutes out of this now.
Yeah.
And that's, I'm totally with you, on the unnecessity of the, like kind of resource.
The mythology, right?
Thing.
The mythology is unimportant.
I felt like it beat me over the head with it. You know?
Well, I mean, it feels like somebody was like, we need to reach for significance here.
Yeah, that's right. Relevance.
Or alternately, somebody was so hung up on the Chinatown idea that they were like, we need to have the water is the thing. Right. What if you add too much water instead of not enough water, right? Like, it's unnecessary.
Look, I'm all for having a movie about the resource wars. It's just that has nothing to do with the main story being told mm-hmm. here.
Yeah.
Several things here. One, I had the hardest time finding this movie. And I forgot which where it was playing. It was like, is it Netflix? Is it Amazon? Is it Hulu? Oh, no, it's HBO Max. And then I had a problem actually finding the movie because I was like, how come they're not showing this movie Transcendence? And then
another Nolan adjacent film.
Yeah, well, Nolan adjacent. Yeah. How so?
It was directed by Wally Pfister, who was Christopher Nolan's director of photography on a bunch of movies.
Oh, I was over on Amazon and I found Transcendence and I see Johnny Depp's face and I said, wait a minute, this is not the movie. So finally I got to Reminiscence and then I was like, oh. And then I was looking at, you know, Cliff Curtis. I said, oh, I really like that guy. I was convinced it was Art Malik from True Lies. Sorry.
I have some questions about the movie. Can I offer these to the group?
Yeah.
Why does having all of this city be halfway underwater not affect the foundations of any of the buildings in Miami?
Great question.
Right, because you know, even when you have flooding issues in a house,
it's like, done, man, you don't fix for. This.
Oh, it's over.
Mold, right? You get, you know, half an inch of water in your basement for 3 days, and then like, man, mold, you're never going to be able to live here. How do the sewers and sanitation systems work? Yeah. What do people do for a living? Yeah. Why don't they just move to Georgia? What is it about being an interrogator that is such a specialized task and skill? Because it seems to me that the guy is able to put himself under by just using a recording of himself with a Walkman.
It's an old tape recorder he uses, this thing.
Are there no countermeasures to memory theft? Can you not run Mr. Charles on yourself? What is it that the land barons do? Why do they live in Miami, since Miami's a pit and not in Denver? Does Antifa win in the end? Because that seems to have been something
the rioting
that happened.
The revolution has begun.
And then when I revealed that this guy was trying to not split his inheritance, that's what caused the city's civil unrest to boil over and they tore down a seawall?
Totally tacked on.
What the hell is happening?
All that felt tacked on, yeah.
I thought this was, I'm going to be very careful in what I say here, an incompetently conceived and executed movie.
That's well put.
Why do you have to be careful there?
Well, I mean, if you JBL. Look at the credits.
Why do you have to be careful there?
Well,
JBL, true equality is women being able to make mediocre crap. Just
that's
like
what
men.
You said, yeah.
This is not mediocre.
I liked it more than you did.
Now, I liked it more than you did. As opposed to, let's say, the number two movie in the box office this weekend, which did you like that more?
Paw Patrol.
They'll be there.
JBL,
on
you
the want to
give us a big boy review?
I will give you a big boy review.
The movie.
Did you go to the movie with your youngest?
I took G Money to the theater. We went to the Alamo. We went to the Alamo. I bribed the girls into coming with me, and so the four of us sat there. We had the entire Alamo auditorium to ourselves.
There was nobody.
That's interesting.
Nobody else, just us.
What time did you guys go?
10 p.m.
1:40
on a
today.
Oh, so 1:40 on a Wednesday.
1:40 on a Wednesday. Had it totally to ourselves.
They must have loved it, having it to themselves.
Well, the girls I just bribed with popcorn. They had no interest in it.
I bet.
G Money, this was his Citizen Kane.
What is the age group for Paw Patrol?
3 to 6.
3 to 6.
Yeah.
Maybe even 3 to 5. Yeah. Maybe 2 to 5. Honestly.
I was looking at when it first came out, Paw Patrol, and it was in 2013. So my kids were about 5, and they never watched it.
I would like to. So for anybody who is child-free who listens to this show, what you need to understand is that Paw Patrol is an all-devouring cultural phenomenon that you have never heard of yourself, but which is honestly on par in terms of its total value with like Star Wars. The guy who created it, oh God, what's his name?
Yeah, you
Keith something or another.
No idea.
Keith something or another. He lives in fucking Monaco. Keith Chapman. Okay. It makes about $1 billion a year in terms of merchandising. It's done more than $10 billion total. It is in brand sales almost every year, ranks number one ahead of both Frozen, the Disney Princesses, and Star Wars. The episodes just on the Nielsens do something like 2 million viewers per. 2 million viewers. The primetime hosts on Fox News would kill for those numbers, yeah. Right? Toothpaste, backpacks, macaroni cups, lunchboxes, toys, apps for your Kindle kids. Paw Patrol is everywhere. And the reason is, are you ready for this? Because Paw Patrol is the Brazzers of children's cartoons.
It's that good. Wow.
Okay. No, not that good. So where children's cartoons used to traffic in things like characters or adventure, mm-hmm, or stories.
Plot.
Or ideas, mm-hmm, like space. Right. Paw Patrol is this. It is like when Johnny Doe shows up at Jack Horner's house and is like, We just shoot it on VHS and just shoot the good scenes. You know, we don't need to tell stories.
Cut out
we just do the money shots.
Get right to the action, right.
And so what Paw Patrol presupposes is, so what is it that young children like? Mm. Well, they like puppies.
They like
trucks.
Cars.
And they like it when children order grown-ups around. So what if, and I'm just thinking out loud here, we had a bunch of puppies who drive trucks, and they all serve under this 7-year-old child who orders the grown-ups around who he is saving. And these puppies are rescue puppies or something. Yet, even though they are rescue puppies,
municipal service puppies,
they also, you know, so one of them drives a police car, one of them drives a fire truck, but you also have a construction vehicle. You also have a garbage vehicle. Why would we have a garbage vehicle in a rescue team?
Kids need to learn about recycling, man.
The answer is because little kids are fucking obsessed with garbage trucks. That's why. They love them. And so we'll just put it in there. Mm-hmm. And we'll have a girl puppy. And you'll know she's a girl because she wears pink. And she
gets saying it's basically market focused.
She gets the helicopter slash. It's not even a focus group. This is like from Big. You know, when you sit around with the kids, you're like, what do you want? Like, you know.
And then we'll
the grown-up is like, well, I have a building that's a transformer. No, we don't want that. We just want puppies that drive garbage trucks. And that's what this is. It's Brazzers. It's all money shots. Okay. And it is with this pulsating music.
All right, pulsating.
That is like,
all right,
like a billion tiny hammers going into your skull at all times. And it's herky-jerky. And it is the most insipid kids cartoon I've ever seen. The movie is the single worst kids movie I have ever seen.
And the movie is a million times better than the TV show, and is the funny thing.
And
the
about
movie is actually much, much better.
You asked me to watch on YouTube, and my goodness.
About every 7 minutes, yeah. G-Money turned to me and shouted at the top of his lungs, "This is the greatest movie I've ever seen! Dad, I love this movie so much! Dad, did you see what Chase just did?" And I was just like, oh my God.
I was going to ask you, because I saw it is an hour and 26, which is,
is it?
You know, in the quadrants, that's like an A+. But but for this purpose, was it the longest hour 26 of your life?
No, here's something we talk about a lot, about the joy of the theatrical experience. Paw Patrol is simultaneously streaming on the Plus. I guess Paramount. We don't have
Paramount Plus.
I chose to take my kid to the theater to see it.
You took three kids.
To the theater to see it. Because I thought, you know what? It'll just be different. It'll be an adventure. It'll be an experience. I never take G-Money to the movies. You know, G-Money was like 3.5 years old when COVID hits, right? You don't take 3-year-olds to the movies. Mm-hmm. And I spent whatever it cost to take like 4 people plus popcorn plus the delicious soft baked chocolate chip cookies that they serve at the Alamo.
You get meal out of it.
And you know what? It was totally different than watching it at home on Paramount Plus. And at home on Paramount Plus, it would have been entertaining content that G-Money enjoyed. But having done it at the theater was an adventure and something that he loved.
Yeah.
Because the theatrical experience is different and better.
Yeah.
Different and better. I saw Reminiscence on IMAX.
Oh.
Which is probably one of the reasons why I have given it more of a pass than anybody else. Question. At the Draft House, did you only have to buy one thing of popcorn?
Yeah.
So the whole family went to go see Paw Patrol here in Dallas, and our theater was full. Our theater was sold out. But we bought one
tub,
$8 order of popcorn, and they gave us an immediate free refill. And our 2-year-old just ate popcorn, just shoveled popcorn in his mouth the whole time, to the point where we had to get a refill just for him, basically. And so it was like $8 for like bottomless popcorn for 4 people, which is the greatest innovation in the movie going experience.
That is $36 at AMC.
At least.
Yeah, maybe
at
least. More.
But the getting the refill is, what you're saying is that you have to leave in the middle of the movie to get.
Mm. No, they come to you. Have you never been to an Alamo? No,
have you never been to a Draft House?
I've never been there, no.
Wow, you're missing out. And they come to you, and they just bring you more popcorn.
That's insane.
And I said to our waitress.
They shovel it into your box.
No, they just bring you a new, they have these metal bowls, and they bring you a new metal bowl full of popcorn.
I said to the waitress when we checked in, I said, do you need me to order 2 popcorns since there's 4 of us?
Same. That's what I said.
And she said, no, I'll just put it in 2 separate bowls. And when you're ready for refills, let me know. That's all.
Yeah.
I was like, thank you.
We also bought 4 beers, one for each of the kids.
We did not. So. I tell you what, Into the Spider-Verse is playing for one show only tomorrow. That is G-Money's favorite movie of all time.
That's a good movie.
And I've only seen it on the big screen once. Mm-hmm. If I can make it work with the various work stuff I have going on tomorrow, I think I'm going to steal out of there and take him to go see Spider-Verse on the big screen.
Nice.
It'll be good. I have to say...
Do you hate it as much as I did, Sonny?
I'm a little surprised. I'm not surprised to hear you down on this show and this movie because, as we all know, you are an all pups are bastards figure. You want to defund the Paw Patrol let Mayor Humdinger... run wild on the streets with his Antifa cronies. And I get that. But I have to say, I really appreciate a show that is willing to make the police our heroes and to teach children the importance of obeying authority in the figure of dogs and 7-year-old boys. I think it's really nice to have somebody out there saying, you know, we need to listen to the police pups. Who are just there to help us? Who are there to help us? They're the thin blue paw between law and order. It's Chase and Ryder and the rest of the gang of the Paw Patrol. So kudos to the Paw Patrol for teaching right and wrong to the young people of our country and Canada.
Did you pick up on the 2 problematic aspects of the movie, Sonny?
No.
The first is that the villain. Mayor Humdinger is a single gentleman with a village people mustache who loves cats and
loves dressing well.
Wears fancy purple clothing and pink boxers.
Top hats.
He's a dandy.
And maybe he's just a dandy and he's the bad guy somehow. And,
well, he's the most villainous person that anyone is. This is why we need police to keep these perverts in line.
This subtle anti-gay thing. It's like, you know, Putin's Paw Patrol. But the other thing is this movie really only exists to introduce a new character to sell merchandise around, Liberty. And Liberty is, you remember the pizza place near me at the beach and I sent you the picture of the box with the guy with the Mario Brothers mustache.
Right, it's too on the nose.
Lisa is she's an urban dog who's friends with Tony the grocer, and she's got a little bit, she talks a little bit like Marissa Tomei, and when she finally joins the team, you talk about giving one of the dogs a short stick. What is her vehicle? A Vespa scooter. What?
So you're saying she's an Italian?
Yeah.
So you're saying she's an Italian?
I'm saying that this is practically Gabagool levels of stereotyping of Italian Americans.
I'm not sure if the humdinger thing I can see. I'm not 100% sure about this.
It's you guys may or may not be shocked to know how many like dissertations have been written about the politics of Paw Patrol.
Oh, I knew there was a story some years ago on CNN about the authoritarian nature of Paw Patrol.
Yes,
there is that. I did laugh when the very first adventure is that an African-American gentleman goes to get rescued by the police dog. And when the police dog shows up, the African-American gentleman is initially not too thrilled. I thought to myself, really? No shit. it's an amazing, you know, so do you guys have favorite kids cartoons? And I don't mean like hipster cartoons from Adult Swim.
Just like what they used to like when they
were kids. Things that your
kids... You mean things that are on now?
No, not necessarily now. Either from your childhoods or from your kids' childhoods. So like stuff that when your kids watch, Vic, that you thought, yeah, you know what? That's pretty good. No?
Boy, let me think. You know what I loved? I loved anything on the Good Night Show on Nick at Night with Nina. Do you remember her?
I remember her.
And she's probably
you wrote
like
about her.
She's probably old now. But you
she's
know,
probably 25.
She wore. She always wore the same pajama pants. I don't know what this is.
I have no idea what you guys are talking
about.
We wrote
a casual about this.
And she was, no,
it was the pervious casual ever.
I made some joke about like if you auction off the pants. I can't remember what I said.
Something like, I always wondered how they smelled.
I don't know. No, that was in my head. I never put that down. I never put that into print. Come on now.
Claudia was trying to figure out why you would want to smell.
No, she was so cute.
If she ever needed to sit someplace, she could sit on my face.
No. Now, Vic.
No, that's terrible. Terrible.
That doesn't seem like a very comfortable place to sit. Could you explain?
Right. No, Claudia would ask
that. What you mean?
Right. What does that mean? It was her and Star was like the stuffed animal. The stuffed Star. But I'll tell you what I was never a fan of, and nobody was in this house, and Kate used to hate it, is the Wiggles. Remember the Wiggles? Yeah. That was really they were the worst. My son used to watch a show that is no longer on called Make Way for Naughty, and it was terrible. But anytime I think about it, I always think about when he was young. But I'm trying to think about for me as a kid, the answer is Star Blazers.
Sure.
That was a cartoon when I was in third grade.
Let me throw this at you boys. On the Disney Plus machine. Not in the kids profile. You have to mean in the adult profile. Look up Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. This was a Saturday morning.
Oh, yeah.
It's an 80s. This is Vixenmy's 80s.
I love that.
You know what? It's very... Okay. It's not very good. It is pretty good. It's got a weird... No, it's better than passable because they really work in the whole Marvel universe.
Oh, they
did. It is shocking how many Marvel characters show up.
There were some episodes where it was like the three villains and it was like Scorpion and Green Goblin and Mysterio or Electro, and it was fantastic.
You even get Magneto.
Craven Hunter was there. Yeah.
You get not only the Spider-Verse villains, but you get mutant villains. Yeah. You get Avengers villains.
Yeah.
The three of them live together, and there's a whole, like, sometimes, you know, they're both hitting on her, and it's not clear who she's down with, and Starfire, if I could just say.
Oh, you mean, I'm sorry, I thought you meant the old one from the 60s, you know, Spider-Man, that
one. No, I know that one. This is the one that was in the 80s.
Yes, I watched it, that was a Saturday cartoon, even though I didn't think they were real superhero part. They're not.
They are except for her. So Iceman.
Right.
So
it was Iceman and Spider-Man and Starfire.
Starfire was created just for that. She was a new character who never caught on in the comics. But it's actually pretty good. And there is, you know, it's funny. It's early 80s, but it has a very 70s vibe to it.
I enjoyed it. It was great. And Stan Lee was the voiceover. He was giving
the intro. Stan Lee is in the voice. I am telling you, if you go and just pull up an episode with it, it is way better than you think.
I mean, I grew up in the golden age of comic book TV cartoons.
So you were like Batman 2000,
the animated series.
X-Men
the animated series. The X-Men animated series, the Superman, the Paul Dini Superman series. And then, God, there was a whole bunch of stuff that wasn't really comic book, but it was kind of like adjacent to all this, like Gargoyles.
Yeah.
Gargoyles was awesome.
Gargoyles is terrible.
Gargoyles is amazing. Gargoyles is amazing. It's like all of the Shakespeare. It's like Shakespeare. It's like Macbeth and Shakespeare, like all wrapped into cartoon form with like Midsummer Nights. It's really fascinating, really? Like what it was.
I was forced to watch a couple episodes of that with G Money a few months ago when he stumbled upon it somewhere, and I was
the original Gargoyles. It's good.
I think
good show.
So. It practically killed me.
It's got a bunch of voices, a bunch of the still Next Generation, Star Trek, the Next Generation guys do voices, like Michael Dorn and
still better than Paw Patrol.
Will Riker.
Oh, you know what I was going to say? You know what I did like when the kids were younger? Phineas and Ferb.
Oh, yeah. I like Phineas and Ferb.
And they would throw adults, you know, alone from time to time, something funny.
There's like a lot of adulty stuff in it.
Great,
yeah.
Great reference.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, G-Money has gotten into Teen Titans Go.
Oh.
And cool. I find that deeply funny. And it surprises me that he likes it because a lot of it is very Adult Swimmy pop culture humor. Like, you know, when Robin looks into the mirror and sees himself, often the reflection he sees is Tommy Wiseau. Basically, it's like Robin as, you know, the guy from The Room with the long, crazy.
Oh, yeah.
I don't like that show. I don't care for it.
It's it grows on you. It grows on you.
I don't care for that whole aesthetic. That whole, like,
it's very like
super cartoony.
It's like the Powerpuff Girls, which is a style.
Yeah, I hate that.
What about SpongeBob? Was that ever a thing? Not for us.
I was too.
I hated SpongeBob. I know people loved it.
I think
I hated it.
Yeah,
there are people my age who really loved it, but I think I was just slightly too old for it. I never got into it. I never got into that.
All right. Well.
Anyway, Paw Patrol was great. Everyone should go see it. Take your kids to learn to appreciate authority.
You know what? Take your kids because they'll love it. Yeah. They'll love it. And if
get some popcorn.
If being with your kid, being with your kid in a theater when they really love something is great.
That so you said that was G Money's first movie in a theater?
I think we've gone one other time, but it's so long ago again because pandemic. That for him, this was his first one. I'm sure he does not remember being in a movie theater.
Right. You know what I remember going with my son to his first movie that he remembers going to a theater? It was Madagascar 2, which by comparison to Paw Patrol sounds like it's Godfather 2.
Basically.
But, yeah. Okay. Well, then we're ready to move on. Corrections, shout outs, anything? Believe it or not, I have a spirit of the week. Thanks to Laura Orland at Savona for sending over a bottle of Japanese vodka. Yes, what don't they do? What don't they do? It's called Haku, not Haiku, but Haku. It's
how do you pronounce it, Victorino?
Haku. Congratulations, 10,000 cars.
Haku.
Everyone, watch Gung Ho. It's still a great movie. Haku is 100% bamboo charcoal filtered spirit distilled from Japanese rice. Enjoy it icy cold neat or as a martini. I brought a bottle. Look at this.
Oh, boy.
Look at that. Isn't that nice?
That's a Japanese.
Is this the one that you got like a tiny little taster of? Like a few months ago, and we're like,
"No, that was
ooh,
me.
I want
that
was
me.
Was this the same
that
brand?
That was a Scotch.
No,
different.
Oh, right.
So
okay.
Thank you.
Or whiskey. It was a Japanese whiskey, yes, not Japanese that, Scotch.
I had a Japanese whiskey last night. I had Hatazaki.
Hey,
how's that pronounced?
It's the sharpest sword ever. Oh, sorry.
No, that's a Hattori
Hanzo.
That's
a Hattori Hanzo. Okay, that is all the...
No, I have a shout-out. Sam Huffines. Listener Sam Huffines, thank you very much. He sent me a very nice gift card to go to get some fajitas in
Taco Bell.
Tejas.
At Taco Bell.
No, yes. No, but I'm looking forward to doing that. I was thinking there are a lot of Sub-Beacon listeners in Dallas. Maybe we should do a movie night. Let me know in the comments if people are up for that. Maybe we'll go to the Draft House or something. So, a lot of listeners in Dallas. So.
Excellent.
But then again, maybe we won't hear from any of them and I won't have to actually leave my house. So, you know. Either way.
Okay.
Either way I win.
Thank you, Sam.
But yeah, no, thank you, Sam.
Great. That is all the time we're giving to this episode. Questions, comments, compliments. Tweet us at Sunny Bunch, at Victorina Mattis. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on Patreon. Just go to subbeacon.com. We're there. Tell your friends. Until next time. So, did you guys see the Spider-Man trailer for the next one? Is it, what's it called? It's not Far From Home, but Never Coming
Home.
Coming Home?
No Way Home.
No Way Home.
They're bringing back the original minus Tobey Maguire, but how does that work universe-wise? How did that come together? That's what I want to know.
I don't know, man. We just saw the trailer. Know, how am I supposed to... Doctor Strange does a spell, and then no, it doesn't work.
Alfred Molina, I mean. Alfred Molina. At the end,
Alfred Molina clearly is wearing some sort of CGI stuff to de-age his face. He was clearly looking a little younger there.
Yeah. And we're getting this and Venom 2.
Venom 2 within weeks of each other?
Really?
They pushed Venom 2 back to like mid-October, and No Way Home comes out mid-December, so it's about 2 months.
Will Venom 2 acknowledge Spider-Man?
Carnage. Let there be carnage.
Oh, with Woody Harrelson?
With Woody Harrelson.
Who looks like Sideshow Bob.
Well, they changed his... So if you remember at the end of the first Venom, he has that terrible wig, yeah. that terrible wig. And they changed his hair for the second one. It's like a normal haircut. It's just like Woody Harrelson doesn't have hair, so I'm sure it's a wig of some sort.
But is there any acknowledgement that of Spider-Man at all in this? Because wasn't the original the guy who plays him Venom, who becomes Venom, right? He worked.
I have a lot of deeply nerdy thoughts about why Venom doesn't work, and the reason Venom doesn't work is because Venom only works as a villain for Spider-Man, right. And Spider-Man was nowhere to be seen in the first one, and my understanding is he is not in the second one, but it is technically in the broader Sony Spider-Verse thing. This Morbius, the movie Morbius starring
Jared Leto, right?
Jared Leto is also in this universe. So, yeah. In theory, Tom Hardy could show up in a Spider-Man movie as Venom at some point.
And also, Russell Crowe is in it, as well as the, isn't he, is Dr. Jekyll or Mr. Hyde?
Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, right. Yes, exactly. I'm sure it's fine.